Welcome to ACC Nation. That's Will Ogenin. I'm Jim Quist. We're both sort of wearing black today. We did not coordinate our fashion statement, but I think it really is reflective of the weekend, Will.
Well, there's a line in the movie, in the Lego movie by Batman, voiced by Will Arnett, where he goes, "I only wear black, and in some cases, very, very dark gray." I feel like that's me anyways. I wear black most of the time.
I gotcha. I thought I'd break out my black shirt today.
We are in mourning. I'm afraid you're right, Joe.
And night and day and all the all 24 hours. Well, that was some kind of weekend. That's all I got to say. To top it off, the AP poll came out today and it was all screwed up. Somebody either forgot how to punch the right buttons or put the right information in, and which means I have to go back in and change something here on our story about the polls. Because
I thought you were talking about the person that put Arizona in the rankings, even though they haven't they lost last week, and I think they've lost like six in a row.
It's
it was obviously, I think it was just a mistake.
The whole thing was just like up, the numbers were all over the place, and you know, there's no structure, no order to it. But they corrected it, which I knew they would. They've had that issue happen a couple of times before. No big deal. Straightened it out. Top five AP and coaches poll. Here's how it looks. Alabama's number one. Georgia's number two. Ohio State is number three. Number four is Oklahoma. And at number five, it's Texas A&M. We don't get to any ACC schools until number six, and that's Clemson. And number eight in the AP poll, it's Notre Dame. Number seven, the coaches say number seven, Notre Dame. Notre Dame moved up in both polls, even though having quite the scare in their overtime game against an unranked team, which nobody thought would even get close to maybe even scoring a couple touchdowns. But we'll talk about that in a couple minutes. The big leap here in the ACC is Virginia Tech. I want to point out something. Virginia Tech has had this track record, and not to diss on Virginia Tech, but they've got a track record of getting into the poll and being there maybe 1 or 2 weeks, and then it's all gone. Based upon their schedule, they have at least 2 weeks. And there is as it stands right now.
Okay.
So
that's at ACC the Q on Twitter, folks.
That's right. Virginia Tech at number 19 in the AP, which is pretty healthy. 21 in the coaches poll, which I think is a little more reasonable. But, you know, two notches, who cares? Number 22, Miami in the AP, whereas at number 22 in the coaches poll, it's UNC. And then we flip-flop here. Number 24 in the AP is UNC. And number 24 in the coaches' poll is Miami. Now, here's where the folks at the AP screwed me over. And thanks a lot for doing that. First world problem. Come on. You know, really. No big deal. But, you know, the fact is that when people go in to check and look at these numbers, they get a little upset if you're not accurate, right? So I'm not accurate at the moment. NC State is at 27. I had them at number 28 because I did some I tried to figure it out. That's where I went wrong. And I also had Boston College tied at number 35. They're actually at 39. And Florida State is in there at 44, which I did not see the last time earlier. Now, over in the coaches' poll, here's how they have theirs. 29, NC State, 35, FSU, 38, Pitt, 41, BC, and 52, Virginia. So the coaches got a little respect for some of the mid-tier teams who started off on a good foot. And probably, I think, based upon what we've seen so far, a couple of those schools are going to break in to the top 25. So, mm-hmm. without any problem. And again, Virginia Tech. I'll beat that dead horse.
It's but, you know, this happens every year. There's always a team that gets a big win and they catapult into the polls when maybe they should, at least because remember in 2014 when they went to Ohio State and won there, and Ohio State ended up winning the national championship game. Virginia Tech finished like 6-7 that year. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but it's a possibility. And then I think a few years ago, they went down to Tallahassee and beat Florida State. I think it was in Charlie Strong's first game as coach. And everyone's like, oh, this Virginia Tech defense is back to its old ways. And it turned out Florida State was a freaking dumpster fire, and Virginia Tech wasn't that good either. But yeah, I guess I understand why they're doing it, but at the same time, it's got to be very cautious.
So yeah, look, here's the thing: people and we've heard this so many times. This is why we're reluctant to give much respect to Miami until they prove it. Okay. I think you are probably more of a naysayer of the Canes than I am. I'm just sort of ambivalent. And look, it's a Missouri thing. Show me. And then I'll believe mm-hmm. that the U is back. I didn't expect anything against Alabama, and that's what I got. And, of course, you know, the fans there got all – some of them, not all of them, got all torn up about that game. And, you know, Manny Diaz is, running out of town. Come on, one game. It's a start. Hey, your buddy, Embrace the Pace on Twitter.
Yes.
And I knew he was going to get burned at the stake for saying this, but he was saying, hey, you know, we ought to, you know, it's only 1 week and we ought to be defending the wall, the ACC wall, and you know, blah blah. And I, the minute I read it, I was like, holy smokes, dude, you just opened yourself up to having, you know, all kinds of stuff dropped on you. And
yeah,
pretty much. I can tell you is that
the valid point, but the reality
I mean
he has a valid point, but the reality is that most people don't care about the success of the ACC. They're more interested in the success of their school.
The team, right. Yeah. And anybody who believes the SEC is like, oh, SEC, SEC. Come on. No.
I don't think Alabama fans would care if Auburn won, you know, like a game against, you know, another Power 5 team. They probably root for them to lose.
They wouldn't throw water on them if they were on fire. So, I mean, you know, it's...
They probably just put, like, oil or something, or kerosene. Yep,
something to make it worse. I'm not saying that people ACC are that bad, but...
No, but...
but here's the thing. Valid point, yes. But here's the thing. The second that I read it, I was like... But, dude, these teams have got to stand up for themselves. They've got to deliver. We have been hearing for years and years and years, we've got to improve the game. And I think that the game of football in the ACC has gotten better. Schools have gotten better. There's more investment going into facilities, better coaches. In some instances, yeah. There's a couple of people who may not agree with that at other schools in the ACC right now, but you know, give it a couple more games. Here's the one thing that Mike Barber from Richmond Times-Dispatch said, and it's been said by a lot of people, but I think that he said it most recently that I saw. I think that we should wait until week three before we put together a top 25 poll. And that way, we, you know, let the teams work out their kinks, get their stuff together, and then we'll know who they really are. And I am more and more on board with that thought pattern than I ever have been. You know, there's a whole reason why all these teams played cupcakes to begin with. It was a way to do that, to get your team into gear and see who worked and who didn't, get them clicking, et cetera. And now, you know, and we can look at the we can look at that Louisville Ole Miss game and say, okay, Ole Miss, man, they had their stuff together from the get go. They didn't have to warm up. Louisville had to have a half before things started to come together. I think that Louisville will be a lot better as the season progresses. And for, you know, Coach Satt, I think he's on the warm seat because of that with the fans. But you know, give it a couple more games. Let's see what happens. See if they can clean up some of the mess there and get that offensive line working.
Yeah, let me just make this point before we keep going about this week. The reality is, a lot of these teams were underdogs as it was in these Power Five games. I mean,
that's right.
Louisville was an underdog against Ole Miss. I think most people, you know, realistically thought that, you know, they were probably weren't going to win. I mean, Florida State was an underdog to Notre Dame, and we'll get into that later, but that will be a game of the year contender. I mean, I think Miami was something like a 19-point underdog to Alabama. It's, and I even sent out this tweet last night during the Ole Miss Louisville game. It's like, there are opportunities in week two for ACC teams to beat Power Five teams, but nobody's going to care because of what happened in week one.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's like in politics, the people that strike hottest first or strike hottest last are the ones that you remember. They really don't. Most people forget about all the stuff that goes on in between, which is a shame because usually that's where the performances really get together and you start seeing things happening. Hey, we'll see if that all works out. Let's get into something other than football here for just a few seconds, because I'd be remiss in not mentioning this. Let's look at the United Soccer Coaches poll, which is, by the way, we're going to have all of this information on the website, accnation.net, so you want to check that out. We're into that time of the season where we got polls galore. This is one of them that is ongoing. I'm going to give you the top three teams that are ranked in collegiate soccer. On the men's side, it's number two, Clemson, number four, North Carolina, number six, Virginia Tech. On the women's side, Florida State holds down number one still. Number two is North Carolina. Number three is Virginia. We'll tell you about the other teams in the article. Now, when it comes to field hockey, number three is Boston College. Number four is North Carolina. Number six is Louisville. Lots of other ACC teams in there that we'll talk about as well. The U.S. Track and Field and Cross Country Coaches Association preseason poll came out the latter part of August. I missed it because, and it just so happens that the USTF CCCA office is in New Orleans. That's where I was, helping out the folks who were affected by Ida. And, let me, just put this plug in here real quick. Near and dear to my heart is the Red Cross. They need, yes, they need a good plug. I like that. Okay. It took me a second, but it clicked. The Red Cross, it always does a great job in helping out people when it comes to times of emergencies. And if when they're there for you in this sort of a situation, you're going to really appreciate it. Do a great job. I've worked with them. My wife, as a disclaimer, works with the National Red Cross. And I can't say enough good things about the people that I know that are out there volunteering and helping. The folks down in Louisiana and Mississippi, and of course, later as that storm went into the Northeast, they need your help. And a good way to do it is through the Red Cross. If you have a favorite group that helps out people in these situations, donate to them, because folks need to sit. Now, getting back to the cross-country preseason poll, at number two on the men's side is Notre Dame, and at number two on the women's side is NC State. We'll have the complete list for you at the website. And also at the website, we have the most recent ITA men's and women's tennis singles and doubles preseason rankings. And we're not going to get into who's who. We'll let you know that on the website. That and a lot more. A lot of really good stuff coming up that we're going to be sharing with you at accnation.net. Make sure you check that out. Come by, take a look at what's going on. We've got a lot of stories that we're going to be sharing. We've got some people who are going to be writing some different things. We're going to be offering some different types of writing, and also some interesting takes on our podcast that Will and I won't be doing, but somebody else will be doing, interviewing people who were stars from the past. So that's just some of the stuff that's coming up. So we have been working hard behind the scenes. Sometimes it looks like we disappear. We do, and we come back with a little bit more. So, Will, let's talk. Yep. Let's talk about this first game, NC State over USF. Great performance, I thought. I thought that for the first game for the Wolfpack, things got a little rusty maybe up front. You know, all these games. Let's just disclaimer here. All of the games, the teams were just a little rusty up front, but the pack looked solid and came away with a 45-0 win over USF.
So I think the best way to put this game into it would be TCB, taking care of business.
That's right.
That's really what they did. I mean, they had there. I mean, South Florida is not the same team they were even 3 years ago when they were right on the same level as Central Florida, as mm-hmm. you know, some of the best Group of Five teams. But they have really fallen off the cliff the last few years. Watching the game, noticed that one of South Florida's quarterbacks, Cade Fortin, was actually a former quarterback at North Carolina. He got to play a decent amount in that game too. But really, the best stat I found for this game is that NC State had more rushing yards, 293, than South Florida had total yards, 271. Bam Knight had 163 yards and a touchdown. Ricky Person, 105 yards, two touchdowns. Like I said, a TCB game. They went in, NC State, you know, took care of business, pitched the shutout, and, you know, they got a bigger game on deck with Mississippi State.
Next up was the Virginia Tech and North Carolina game, and North Carolina going in as one of the top-ranked teams in the country. Now, a lot of people will say they were over-ranked, and I think maybe you're in that group. Virginia Tech coming over the 17-10 final. I tell you what, this was a big win for the Hokies. Now, as we had mentioned earlier in the program, let's see them continue down this path, because I think this is critical, because hey, Justin Fuente was put on the hot seat by many in the media. I totally agree with that. And I think this notches the heat down just a hair, but he's still got a lot of games to go.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, this was a game he really needed. I mean, the difference in this game was the first half. Because UNC came out of the gate slow. Virginia Tech capitalized on the offensive end. Overall, say, like, because I think I don't remember how many yards North Carolina had in the first half, but it wasn't very many. They just couldn't get anything going. They were just Virginia Tech's defense was just getting a lot of pressure on Sam Howell. They ended up sacking him six times, and that right there. I mean, I'm curious to see if this is just a blip on the radar, or if UNC actually has some serious offensive line problems. They're going to face better fronts this season. And if they can't protect Sam Howell like that, then they're going to be in a lot of trouble. The best receiver looks like Josh Downs, he's going to be like the next big receiving threat. He had eight catches, 123 yards and a touchdown, had a big touchdown. And the second half that brought it, that was their only touchdown of the game, and brought him within, you know, a score. And yeah, he had, like I said, 123 yards and a touchdown. The second half, UNC outgained Virginia Tech 236-93. So that tells you that they made adjustments to North Carolina, but still between Sam Howell's three picks, the constant pressure from Virginia Tech's front, they just couldn't do anything. I mean, Amari Barno had a sack and a half, 3.5 tackles for a loss. Tywin Garbutt had 2 sacks. These are guys, you know, they're not the same level of some of the defensive guys of the past, but they're still wreaking a lot of havoc. And this is a huge, huge win for Virginia Tech. And I know, Senator, earlier we were kind of discrediting it. I'm just saying what we're saying is it's not necessarily going to lead to anything in the future because, you know, these things tend to happen in the first game of the season. This is probably when you want to get North Carolina is right at the beginning of the season when they still don't have everything figured out.
Yeah, good point. Because, you know, if you can – in most games, and this is, I think, a comment that we had in leading up to some of these games was that the teams that strike quickly and are hot – and get the advantage in the first half of any of these games are probably going to pull out the win. If you get enough momentum going, you pull the rug out from underneath teams, and it's hard to come back in the first game of the season. It becomes easier as the season goes on. Coaches get a little more clarity. The players understand their roles, understand what they need to do to make adjustments. They start seeing the actual action on the field clear. You're right. This was an opportunity that Virginia Tech took advantage of and shut down. I still think UNC is a good team. Now, whether or not they're a top 10, 15 to 20, I see. I think they'll rise again, and you may even see them get past 15 as the season progresses. I don't see this as you know, saying, okay, that's who North Carolina is. I don't see it.
Right. I agree with you.
Now, I've said this. We've talked about it. I think this should be the last season for David Cutcliffe. I think he should bow out and gracefully. He's done a lot for the program at Duke. But there comes a time, and with a new AD looking at things realistically, this is the type of opener that this should never have happened. Charlotte 31, Duke 28. I find absolutely no reason in the world for that type of score. You know, if it were a lower scoring affair, maybe. But 31-28, Duke comes away smarting with a loss to Charlotte.
And it was Charlotte's first win over a P5 school. Really tells you just where Charlotte's really developed their program under Will Healy these past few years. Remember, they were a big deal a couple of years ago when they had made their first bowl out of nowhere. Had a little bit of a down year last year, but then obviously they got a big win this year at home. You remember back last season, Jim, you know, what was Duke's biggest bugaboo? It was the turnovers, right?
Yeah.
They had 3 turnovers in this game.
Yep.
Gunnar Holmberg coughed it up twice. He did throw for 228 yards and a touchdown, but my God, you hate to see an effort like Mateo Durant spoiled and a loss. But God, I mean, he's the only reason you're going to want to watch Duke football this year. 29 carries, 255 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he also had 37 yards receiving, so he had almost 300 total yards. But, you know, we didn't have very high expectations for Duke coming into the season. But still, I think we all expected them to win this game, even if they didn't blow them out. I mean, figured they'd get a win, but geez, this is not a good start.
No. And
like you said, maybe, you know, we've been wondering if this could be it for David Cutcliffe. I mean, it might make sense when you think about that, you know, This is Coach K's last year. Duke has a new athletic director. Her name escapes me at the moment. I'm sorry, but I just think it wouldn't be a bad idea to just, you know, hit the reset on the state of your two biggest cash cows in football and men's basketball.
Yeah, it's time. Duke has been, I think, has been lagging behind where they should be with these two programs for more than a couple of years. I just think they're lagging behind the rest of the ACC, and that's not a good thing. You know, Duke's got a great reputation, obviously, under K, but, you know, when K goes, the reputation is going to diminish. It's just simple. It's going to. You know, you may have one good year after that, maybe two, but it's going to fall off, and you've got to start rebuilding that basketball program, and you've got to start building the football program past where David Cutcliffe brought it. And again, kudos to him, because he's done a lot with that team and really given it some oomph and some guidance that they've needed. But, there comes a point where you've built the foundation of the house. Now you need to bring in the people who are going to put the drywall and the electrical and the HVAC and all that in. And I don't think he's the guy. Our next game, Wake Forest 42. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, and you look at where Duke's program was between the time Spurrier left and to the time they hired Cutcliffe. And if they won a game in a season, you know, that was almost a successful season. But, Cutcliffe won the ACC Coastal, you know, had multiple bowl games. Like, he was definitely the best coach they've had since Spurrier. And, you know, it just sad to see it fall in such hard times like this.
Yeah. It needs to be at the next level. Wake Forest 42 over Old Dominion 10. I think Wake Forest was not putting the pedal, the metal to the pedal, man. It was just like, or whatever. Wake Forest is going to lay some whoop ass on some people. Old Dominion is an okay team, and they'll give you a good game. 42-10 doesn't tell the whole story, and watch out is all I got to say. Wake Forest is, if they're going to play you, watch out.
Well, yeah, I think you were right about that, Jim. They were probably about 70% throttle. You get a pretty vanilla game plan. I mean, if they really wanted to, they could have, you know, really gone razzle dazzle and put up a lot more yards than they did. But they basically just wanted to do just a very vanilla thing, vanilla offense, not do too anything exotic, just, you know, get, you know, have your best players on offense, you know, handle the ball and let them do their thing. I mean, Sam Howell just, you know, threw for three touchdowns, saw Christian Beale Smith have a couple on the ground, and the defense held ODU to 272 yards and 3.5 yards a play. Remember, ODU didn't play last year. They have it's their first year head coach, Ricky Ronnie, but I mean, obviously he was hired before last season, but like I said a moment ago, they didn't play last season. So they're trying to get their, you know, legs or their feet wet, I guess you could say. I talked about it with NC State. This was also a TCB game. Just take care of your business and move on.
That's right. Here's another one. Boston College 51, Colgate 0. Could have been much worse. Again, watch out for this team. You underestimate the Eagles at your own risk.
Yeah, even with Colgate, I mean, even at their crest, they still were completely outmanned in every way. I mean, they were not aqua fresh in this game. I mean, you could just see it from the close up. They are just far and away a different, or not even close to Boston College's level. And as I sit here trying to come up with more toothpaste jokes on this game, this is the only question I come out of this game with the Boston College is if they're going to have a consistent running back. The leading rusher in this game was Phil Jakovic. He had 61 yards on the ground, but also they didn't have anybody who ran the ball a ton. I don't think anybody even had double digit carries in the game. Jakovic 300 yards, 3 touchdowns. That's what you wanted out of him. Zay Flowers, 7 catches, 135 yards, looking like an elite receiver, which I know our good friend AJ Black talked about that in the preseason podcast. And he had mentioned the tight end spot. Trey Berry was someone to watch. He caught a 51 yard TD in this game, and BC put up 525 yards of offense in this game and definitely took care of their business. And, they still have a couple of weeks where they have a big game against Missouri, and I won't look too far ahead, but I think that's going to be the game that kind of defines where Boston College is right now.
Yeah. Alabama over Miami, 44-13. Pretty much what we expected to see. Nothing surprised me about this game.
Nothing. Same. I think a lot of people wanted Miami to keep that game close just because I think people are tired of Alabama winning the national title, but my biggest takeaway from this game is I don't think anybody's beating Alabama this year with the performance Bryce Young had, 344 yards, 4 touchdown passes. And good luck, everybody. Miami only had 266 yards in this game. D.R. King threw 178 yards, but was picked twice in his first game back from a torn ACL. But the reality is, I'm not even going to judge anything off of that performance. I think it'd be kind of a little premature. It's these next couple of games. They have Appalachian State, who I think they're a single digit favorite. I think they'll beat them. And then the Michigan State game, who, if anybody watched that game, Michigan State with Kenneth Walker had almost 300 yards rushing in their win over Northwestern. So I'm curious to see if he can repeat that effort, and if they are a threat, at all. And if Miami has any issues, I'm curious to see what those will be. But, the reality is, it's Alabama's world, and we're all just living in it.
Yep. I think Miami will tell us a lot about who they are if they lay a smackdown on Appy State. And I think it's possible. We'll see. We get a little closer during the week. We haven't done our picks and power poll yet, but, we have to digest some stuff.
I think there's a good point to that, Jim. And it's weird because to look at it, when they face Appalachian State, their starting quarterback is someone we were very familiar with last year, Chase Bryce. I think they turned him over several times in their meeting last year.
Yep. So we'll see how that all works out. Next up, again, this is another cruising for a bruising. This is a team that has huge potential. And the unfortunate thing is we say that about them every year, and it's like, holy crap, it's a roller coaster. That's the word that applies to them every year. But Pitt came away with a 51-7 win over UMass. This team has more, I think, this year than they have had in several years. This is a team, again, we've got a bunch of them. Keep an eye on them because they're going to lay some whoop-ass on people.
Yeah, and what really stood out in this game for Pitt, they held UMass to 42 yards rushing and 1.6 yards per carry, and 20 of those yards came on one play. But then again, this is UMass. I mean, they're like right down there on the dregs of FBS schools with, like UConn and a lot of those other schools. On a given week, they can't cut it.
Oh man, you have brought everything with you. You know, I got your plugs right here, man. If you can see that. Anyway.
Anyways, you know, Kenny Pickett, just, you know, 272 yards, 2 touchdowns, basically what you would expect him to do, you know, against UMass. It's next week that I'm curious to see what they do. They travel to Neyland Stadium to play Tennessee in front of, well, the capacity is over 100,000, but I don't know, necessarily think there's going to be 100,000 there with the state of the Tennessee program at the moment, but we'll see.
Yeah. I think, you know, and again, this is a game where if Pitt just absolutely crushes Tennessee, which I think is very possible, if they pull out all the guns and just say, okay, let's lay it on them. And I think Pitt, first of all, it'll be very telling, and that's a top 25 debut for them next week if they beat them. So here's our surprise game. I think this surprised everybody. We only had two people among our group pick Ohio. And I know why one of them picked Ohio. It's because he's from Ohio. And he just did it for the heck of it. Syracuse 29, Ohio 9. I never would have seen that score, ever.
When you look at the landscape of the ACC this year, or this week, excuse me, and you ask yourself, okay, what team probably impressed, well, at least exceeded expectations more than any other team? And the answer is Syracuse. I know a lot of people will think of Virginia Tech because of the upset win, but reality is that game, I think there was a possibility of Virginia Tech pulling off the upset given, you know, they're hosting, you know, the first game of the season in front of, you know, a huge crowd. And obviously Virginia Tech is one of the most storied, you know, home crowds in all of college football. But Syracuse, you know, there were minimal expectations for this program this year. And Ohio's been a pretty solid MAC team. Granted, their head coach just retired a couple of months ago, but still, I think Ohio might have been a favorite in this game on the spread. But if Syracuse wants to keep this up, they're just going to have to keep running Sean Tucker. In this game, 25 carries, 181 yards and a touchdown. They only threw for 100 yards as total as in this game. But say, I don't know if it's going to lead to much of anything, but for 1 week there's some positivity out of the Syracuse football program.
Good stuff. I mean, in anybody watching the ACC as a whole, and especially Syracuse fans, have been waiting for something positive. And mm-hmm. There's this nagging question in the back of everybody's mind. Dino, what are you doing, man? When are you going to deliver? And which, you know, and I think a lot of people's minds puts him on a warm seat. This certainly helps to ratchet down the heat again. Now here's this next game. Holy crap. Fans are really PO'd over this one. Jeff Collins, may not be able to show his face at Waffle House again for a while. Northern Illinois, the Huskies, pulled out basically a last second win, 22-21 over Georgia Tech. I don't even know what to think of this.
Well, I can tell you this. This is the kind of seat Jeff Collins might be on in the eyes of Georgia Tech fans.
Light it up.
Yeah, this I think actually might be more shocking than the Syracuse result when you think about it. I mean,
yeah,
Georgia Tech was a 19 point favorite in this game. Northern Illinois went winless last year. I think they lost some of their previous games in 2019. They were just a shell of their former self. I mean, like I said, they're not. When we talked to Kelly Quinlan, I mean, Northern Illinois is not the same team they were when Jerry Kill and Dave Doran were coaching them. They're just not there. And they were, like I said, a 19-point underdog, went in there, played pretty evenly with them, and then got the 2-point conversion with like 38 seconds left to that ultimately won the game. I know Georgia Tech ended up lining up for a 60-yard field goal, and that, but that got blocked. The question out of this game is, you know, Jeff Sims, he was 3 of 8 for 21 yards, was injured in the first half, and we don't know of his status for next week. My thinking is that if they wanted to sit him, they could, because I can't see Georgia Tech losing to Kennesaw State. That's just me. But Jordan Yates came in, you know, did fine, 12 of 18, 135 yards. You know, Jahmyr Gibbs, Jordan Mason combined for 195 on the ground. Georgia Tech ran for 273 yards as a team, but the Sims and Yates were also sacked 4 times. That's a bit of a question mark when you, you know, go back to pass 26 times and get sacked 4 times. That's a little bit of a red flag, but we've seen that quite a bit with some of these teams in the ACC, and we haven't gotten to the biggest question mark yet. But yeah, this is a very troubling outcome for Georgia Tech, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. In our conversation with Kelly Quinlan, from Jackets Online in the last podcast, I definitely got the impression, and it was my feel, that the offensive line and the defensive line as well, both of them have beefed up significantly and seem to be coming together. And I think Kelly said, yeah, that's the direction they're headed. This is why I think this game really blew me away. It was just sort of like, wow, it just wasn't there. Anyway, we'll see next week and the weeks thereafter. Virginia, you know, again, a team that has a lot of potential and a lot of strengths and did not throttle their cross-state, I'll call them a cross-state rival of sorts, William & Mary, final 43-0. Virginia could have done a lot more damage here. And I think just from a gentleman's standpoint, Bronco Mendenhall goes, yeah, that's enough. And you leave it at that, because you don't want to leave a bad taste in the mouth of a team that you're in state with and that you play kind of on a regular basis. So,
did you know Mike Lundin was a cop?
Really?
Had to bring it up since we're talking about William & Mary, but and you're right. I think they could have.
And in this thing behind me.
Yep, and that city right behind you. That's there. Right. But yeah, I think if Bronco wanted, they could have put a 50 spot on him. Yeah. But you know, that's how Bronco was. I know that final drive before they finally took a kneel down, they were running their backup quarterback Ira Armstead, and he was just gashing that William & Mary defense. And I think they finally they got down to about the William & Mary 30, and it was like, all right, that's enough. Let's take a knee, but. You know, funny thing is Armstead's a backup quarterback. He ended up being the leading rusher for them. He had 54 yards. Like I said, most of it came in the end, but whatever. But Brennan Armstrong, 339 yards, passing 2 touchdowns. He also ran for 2. That's the second career 300-yard passing game, but both of them have been against FCS schools. He had a 383-yard effort last season against Abilene Christian. So I guess I'd like to see him get a 300-yard game against an FBS opponent, and I think that will happen this season. My favorite play of him was his deep ball to Demeek Starling for a touchdown, hit him pretty much right in stride. A nice throw for touchdown. Virginia held William & Mary to just 183 total yards. Real nice effort from the Hoos. Obviously, they had a lot of questions on defense last season, but by no means have they been solved. It's one game against a William & Mary team that was picked to finish near the bottom of the Colonial this year. The test really starts this week against Illinois.
Here is a game that you need to get tickets to now. November 13th, Virginia entertains Notre Dame. That is going to be an interesting game.
Yeah.
Next, a battle of the top fives. We knew, hey, you know, in our preseason picks, I said mm-hmm. Georgia was going to beat Clemson, but I didn't stick with that in my picks going into the week of, and I should have. I should have known. There was something in my gut telling me that Clemson was going to lose this game. But close, man. Certainly not any kind of an offensive juggernaut for either. Georgia 10, Clemson 3. A cold, hard reality check for Clemson fans.
Yeah. I thought Clemson was going to win this game. I picked them in our picks. Obviously, I was wrong. The issue with this game, I mean, we talked about offensive line issues. Georgia's defense sacked DJ Uiagalelei 7 times. Now, was that a product of Georgia's defensive line being that good or Clemson's O-line being that bad? I'm going to lean towards the Georgia's defensive line is that good. Georgia also held Clemson to a measly 2 yards rushing.
Amazing.
All of 2 yards. I think I could understand the frustrations with the Clemson fans who thought that their running back should have carried the ball more. I think Lynn J. Dixon had 1 carry, and then Will Shipley had 4 carries, and the other guy, I can't remember which other guy it was, had 4 carries. But you have 9 carries by your running backs, and then DJ Uiagalelei had 14. Granted, you know, some of those were sack stats, but still, take out the sacks, and he still had 7 carries. And I'm saying words with the letter S a lot. Yeah, in reality, it was a fairly even game. I mean, yeah, Georgia did have more total yards, but really the one mistake in this game was the difference. When DJ threw the pick 6 to Georgia, and that was the only touchdown of the game. Now, you could look at looking at this on the positive side. Good luck against that Clemson defensive line. They look a lot better than they did the last time we saw them on the field. And I think that is something that will carry over to the season. Now, you know, like I say, they probably won't face a defensive line as good as that until maybe if they get a rematch potentially in a little under 4 months. But by then, DJ will be a lot more mature as a quarterback. He'll have over a dozen games in a under his belt, so he'll know what to do against a team like that. But not necessarily they'll win a rematch, but I think he'll do a lot better second time around.
I agree. We'll see how that plays out. Here's the thing: do not think for a second that Clemson is a wounded warrior out there on the field, because the rest of the games on their schedule, they're going to be looking for blood, man. They're not going to allow any losses here on out. So you're going to really have to battle them down to the wire in order to get a win on Clemson for the rest of the season. We'll see if
they're going to be taking a lot of frustrations out on South Carolina State this week.
Indeed. Okay. Here is the game that, wow. I'd rather watch the drama of this game than watch Rudy, the movie. In overtime, it's Notre Dame 41, FSU 38. How about them Noles?
Boy, a lot of things about that Sunday night brought me back to my 20s, because FSU was good back then. I was also eating Taco Bell at 10 o'clock at night that night. But this game will go down as a game of the year contender. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Just from the drama of the way it ended, we'll get to that in a second. But Florida State trotted out Jordan Travis. He threw for 130 yards and 2 touchdowns, but he was picked off 3 times. McKenzie Milton obviously came in the fourth quarter, led the TD drive that got him right back into it. Jayshon Corbin, a nice 89-yard run early on that opened the scoring for Florida State. The defense, I thought Florida State's defense was kind of the story of this game up for their, well, obviously besides McKenzie Milton, but holding that potent Notre Dame rushing attack to just 65 yards, I think that really says something. Again, like I say, like you use with Missouri, show me again. We'll double Missouri it. How about we say that?
Yeah.
They held Kyren Williams to just 42 yards on the ground. Jack Cohn did throw for 366 yards and four touchdowns. The fact that Mackenzie Milton came into the game, led them on a touchdown drive that I think it tied it, if I'm not mistaken, but, you know, gave them the chance to win. And unfortunately, special teams cost them. Still a great story. I'm so glad he got an opportunity and he took it. And I know on the depth chart for the next game, he had Mike Norvell lists both as starters, but I think the smart thing to do is to give Mackenzie Milton the start and let Jordan Travis come in here and there. Like, Jordan Travis is too much of a weapon to not have him on the field. You got to use him in certain situations. So I think it would be smart to probably play both of them.
I would agree. And I know a lot of people say, we shouldn't have this two quarterback offense. Bull. You got talent. You put them on the field. You make stuff work with them.
You put your best playmakers on the field. I mean, that's Virginia right. Basically played four quarterbacks in their game against William & Mary. Obviously, Brendan Armstrong. Keaton Thompson's kind of a quarterback. He can take it. Ira Armstead, I mentioned earlier, and their freshman Jacob Rodriguez, he actually lined up at running back. And we're going backwards to Virginia for a second, but I thought it was funny that they released their depth chart for the game against Illinois, and Keaton Thompson's listed as a football player on their depth chart. Jacob Rodriguez, I guess you could say, is listed as a backup football player, because he's right below him on the so Virginia is the only team out there that has a backup football player.
Hey, if Washington can be the Washington football team, why not? So, I say you got the talent. You put them out on the field, and you find ways to use that talent, and you make it work for you. You got two great quarterbacks there at Florida State. You don't want to lose either one of them. You want to use both of them, because both of them have some distinct skills that are dynamic, and it was fun to watch.
Yeah.
Now, let me just say this. Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you can't ask Mackenzie Milton to run a lot right now. I don't think that's fair to him. I mean, given what he's coming back from, that's where you use Jordan Travis.
That's right. Scared the heck out of me every time I watched that kid go someplace. I felt myself tensing up thinking about his injury. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. We're giving all these kudos to the Noles, and rightfully so. It's nice to see them back, and I hope that's something that's consistent. Notre Dame looks pretty daggone solid. Had some areas that they were stumbling with, but if you look at the stats on this game, they did pretty well too. And if you think for a second that Notre Dame should not be ranked in the top 10 like they are, you're sadly mistaken. That is a team that's gonna lay it on some people as well. So as the season progresses and they work out a little bit of this kink in the rust that they had in game number one, trust me, it'll all come together for the Irish without any problem. Now, I said this in the piece that I had on the website today. In regard to Brian Kelly, he needs to keep his day job because he's no comedian. He doesn't know how.
That's the last per. That's really the last person you should be making that joke.
You know, I got where he was coming from. I really did. I mean, I got it the second he said it. But it turned into this big brouhaha, which you know what he did wrong? It wasn't quoting McKay. It was just his delivery. I mean, it was a funny line, but it had to be in context. And the problem is, when you deliver a line, if you want to be funny, you have to deliver a line and pause and let it sink in. He kept on talking, which ran it into the ground, which lost all the comedic effect that it could have had. Anyway, keep your day job,
probably
Coach.
Best to move on from this one, because I might say something that might get me in trouble. So let's move on.
Okay, that's our last game. Ole Miss over Louisville. This is, golly, Ned, this was so disappointing in that first half.
Personal foul, targeting on the defense.
Head, clunk. Ole Miss, 43, Louisville, 24. Louisville's got a lot of work to do. Ole Miss has done their work, and they obviously have improved in big time on defense. So they'll have a decent season in the SEC. Louisville has got to find stuff click for them in the games to follow. I think the offensive line started to come together as the second half went on. But golly, offensive line was horrendous in the first half. And the secondary, where were you? I mean, you were being torn apart. Defensive coordinator, you got to do something there. You got guys with speed and ability. You need to make adjustments and not wait for the half to make them. Make them on the fly. That's a sign of a good coach. You can make them as the game is being played. It wasn't being done. That falls on the coordinator in my eyes, and they need a little hand slap from Satterfield.
Oh, why'd they send all the JV teams out to play these SEC schools this week?
I'm sure that was said.
Well, look at the first half by itself. Yeah. Ole Miss was up 26-0. Ole Miss had 327 yards of offense in the first half because they threw for 250 yards on 13 completions.
Mm.
Even though, like I say, there were just a crap ton of penalties in this game. And we'll get to that in a minute. But Louisville had just 107 yards of offense in that first half. Malik Cunningham is 6 of 14 for 26 yards. Yeah, that's not going to work. But, you know, say you said they rebounded in the second half. You know, he was a lot better. I don't know if some of that was just Ole Miss taking its foot off the gas, or maybe they made the necessary adjustments. But, yeah, the story of this game, aside from that, were the penalties. I mean, Ole Miss had 14 penalties for 125 yards, and Louisville 9 penalties, 74 yards. Yeah, I don't know exactly how many people got ejected for targeting throughout this season and throughout that game, but it felt like quite a few. The one thing I did know is even with Lane Kiffin out because of COVID, that he was going to have that offense working. The only question is whether Louisville was going to be able to keep up, and I think the answer pretty clearly early on was no. Now it's important for them to really build off that second half and get some momentum, because they cannot have another rough outing and see the season spiral out of control.
Want more ACC sports news and interviews? Make accnation.net your homepage, or follow us on Google News. Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation on your favorite podcast or streaming radio platform. While you're there, we'd appreciate a rating and your support through PayPal. Follow us on social media at ACC Nation. And you'll find Will on Twitter at WillsWorldMN, and I'm at ACCTheQ. Until next time, cheers.
Score.